Dave, agus falchig a motherfucker. Footcrawl, good head stuff if we fuckle. Gaelga, fuckle Gaelga, agus fuckle the heron. It's Mr. Darko Shane. And I have a very special guest for you today, someone I've been dying to have on for ages because I think some of the work that she's been doing promoting the Irish language in so many different spheres has just been amazing. I've actually been trying to get her on since I started the show, and she's finally graced us with her presence in the studio. It is, of course, Ciara Ní Hae.
Conas atáisir.
How are you getting on?
Good.
Staying out of trouble?
That's not true. It's not like you've been constantly messaging me, like trying to get me.
I'm fairly sure I have now.
In fairness, I didn't live in the country for a year. So
this is the thing. You were recently returned from the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
The Sam.
The Sam. Yeah, Philadelphia. I was living there for a while.
What were you doing in Philadelphia?
I was teaching Irish to the Yanks. Is Yanks a slur? I love saying it to Yanks, but if I say it when the Yanks not here, it feels like it's not okay.
It's funny because someone actually did, because I said that, you know, punk on it because I thought it was interesting that the word for a Yank and the word for a dot, like as in an email or an email address or a website, were so similar.
Mm-hmm.
But and then someone did say, you know, Yank is a slur. And there was only one person, though. I think he got to have three or four people before I say, okay, yes, maybe this is crossing a line.
I think that's the thing, is like when you say it to Americans, you know that they can tell that you're joking. And I had to explain to Americans, too. I was like, well, in Ireland, insulting someone is how you tell them you love them.
Like, this is the thing, you big tick.
You shrub, you tick. That's my favorite phrase. Yeah.
So, and was there much interest in Philadelphia in studying the Irish?
Yeah, I mean, there was different groups. There would be older people who might be coming back and learning about their heritage and trying to learn Irish, and who had visited the country a few times. So I did kind of some outreach with them.
Mm.
And then in the university itself, it was just students learning it like they would Spanish or any other language. But they chose Irish, usually because either they'd done the other languages in school and they didn't want to do more of them, or else they just thought it was interesting, or they had a link to Ireland themselves.
Stuff, because we have a few American listeners to the show who've been in touch and who are studying over there. What do you find they respond well to, American learners of the Irish language?
I did a few songs with them, and that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I did poems. And I think it's nice with any language to feel like you've done something. Like you've learned an entire thing from the culture rather than just learning off phrases. You know?
Yes.
So actually, I was at the AGM of the Conor na Gaeilge club last night, and there was a guy there who's from America, and he's now on the Quiste.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's not even the first guy from America or person from America who's been on the Quiste of the club, so that's cool.
That's fantastic.
He learned Irish, and he came in America in Notre Dame, and now he came to Ireland and did a master's. And so, some Americans take it the whole way.
I think normally when people think of Irishness and Philadelphia, they think of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and all the mayhem in that particular bar.
I did go to, there's a bar that has like murals of There's Always Sunny on it and stuff like that when I was there.
So one of the things, Ciara, you've done that I remember seeing, I think this is absolutely brilliant and I wish I was this good, is What the Fuckle on YouTube.
What the Fuckle?
Tell us about What the Fuckle.
What the Fuckle? It is a series I started. I've been thinking about it for a while because I'll explain myself and my existence now. I'm from Ireland. I'm from Dublin. And my parents, although they're not negative towards Irish, like they're positive toward the language. They don't speak it. I didn't grow up with Irish at all.
Mm.
I didn't have any schooling through Irish.
Yeah.
And then when I was about 18 and I was going to pick either medicine or law or something in college, I realized if I don't study Irish, I'll never actually use it, because I'd seen this happening to people. And the reason I had some Irish is because I'd gone to the Gaeltacht in the summers. So I studied Irish, and wait, why am I telling the story again?
You're telling the story to get to the how we get to What the Fuckle.
How we got to What the Fuckle, yes. So no one in my family knows about Irish. So it's really funny, because then as I went on in my life and then I was doing all these things and learning more about the language, first of all, it was new to me because I was this like fish out of water. I was kind of like Harry Potter going into Hogwarts. You know, everything was new to me. I was like, what's going on? And then when I would like relay this information to my family, my sister would be like, that's mad. I never knew that. I wish you could record this so I could give it to my friends, this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh no, I could never do that. And then eventually I said, actually, you know what? I think I might do that. So then I said, I'd set up What the Fuckle and make some videos explaining stuff about Irish that no one ever told me and that I had to discover the hard way.
Mm-hmm. This is What the Fuckle, where I answer your questions about the Irish language. I was texting the other day and a friend of mine who doesn't speak Irish looked over my shoulder and realised that I was using shorthand and text speak in Irish. And she didn't realise that existed in Irish. But of course it does, because no matter what language you're texting in, you want to make it as short as possible, because texting is a pain in the hope. Probably the most commonly used abbreviation that I use is GRMA. Can you guess what that means? It's Gurev Mahagot. Thank you.
Was that what the fuck was your first venture into Irish language social media activities?
I think it all kind of happened a bit accidental. I started off just having a Twitter page and being involved in that amazing community of people online. Shout out to everyone who's on Twitter and who engages with each other on a regular basis. It's just lovely to have that in your pocket every day. That was my first kind of involvement. And I had a blog. So I was studying Scots Gaelic when I was in college. And I thought, I just wanted to talk about the links between the two languages, Scots Gaelic and Irish. So I kind of started a blog about that. And my blog just kind of kept going. It's kind of like a personal diary now of all the different things I'm doing. And because I was doing that, I guess you get comfortable with publishing things. And I said I do videos, but it's totally different doing videos.
Yes.
Because it's your face. And you just have to just be like Scarlet for me, but it's out there now. And once I'd done the first one, it was fine.
This is the thing, because we've been hoping to do one or two particular video episodes specifically with regards to talking about sign language, which we can't really talk about just in a purely audio basis. But obviously when I can come into the studio and say, it just happens today, I'm wearing my nice shirt and I had a haircut, and that's great, but not always.
You're looking well.
Thank you very much. Whereas, I mean, say sometimes I can record and no one knows what I look like or how hungover I am or anything like that.
So. I want to tell everyone that I'm wearing makeup. So when you're imagine me wearing makeup, right?
Yeah. Good stuff. And so what's the response been like on those what the fuck videos?
It's been really good. It wouldn't be like I'd put them out and be like, how many views does it have? It'd be more like, am I helping people, kind of? But there are, like, some of them do have a good few views, especially I think it's like explaining Irish surnames, which obviously baffles people. And then I just actually am going to upload one today about Loganamnacha, so place names.
Oh, yes.
Which ended up being like 20 minutes long, so it's going to be three different videos.
It's hard to stop talking when you get into like place names, though, isn't it?
Yeah. My dogs kept coming in during the video, so they were like sniffing around. So it's been really good. And even at the Oireachtas, I was like just at Club Na Féile, at the like big dancing part on Saturday night. And someone came over and said that it was his first time at the Oireachtas. And before he went, he looked up Oireachtas na Gaeilge on Oireachtas na Samhna on YouTube and found my video and watched it. And then he saw me there and he told me. And I was like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I wanted. Because when I was younger and I was going to the Oireachtas, I didn't know what it was. So at least someone is kind of helping people.
Is there some confusion for the fact that Oireachtas has the same name as the Houses of Parliament?
Yes. Yeah. People are like, oh, you're going to lovely. Have fun.
I thought they were on holidays right again. So then, obviously, in addition to doing these videos, tell us about your poetry. You perform.
I do.
Poetry in Irish and in English?
Yeah, in both languages. I do. I write kind of performance poetry and I publish things as well. So some people kind of might favour one or the other. I just do whatever. Do both. But I do really like video poems because I kind of think in this day and age, how many people sit down with a book and open it and read through poetry? I know there are people who do it.
Yeah.
But I do think there are more people or maybe just different kinds of people who would watch a video of a poem. And I think I naturally might be one of those people who'd watch the video, digital native kind of. And I obviously read poems as well. And I have this hashtag, Filiocht na Mart, where I try and get people to take pictures of poems or take them from wherever they exist in this far reaches on the internet, Oscailge, and share them with the hashtag Filiocht na Mart. Is trying to make a little pun, Filiocht na Mart, on Filiocht na Mard, which is the poetry of the bards, kind of.
Yeah.
But it's poetry of a Tuesday. So just every Tuesday to give people a reason to post poems. But you're asking about REC. REC, or EIC, is a bilingual spoken word night that I set up a few years ago. And it's been going on about every month. Not every month, though. Hopefully it's supposed to go on every month and it doesn't happen because it's just me organising it. But I brought it to like different festivals like Body and Soul, Electric Picnic, and around the country to like Derry, Galway, loads of different places, and with the Irish Writers' Centre. And yeah, we've had a really good time.
Why'd you call it REC?
I called it REC. I had different criteria for naming. So if you name something in Irish with a father.
Yes.
People are going to leave out the father.
Yes.
And then that's going to happen.
this is something I found, and it's the father thing has become an even bigger issue in the age of social media, technology, and the internet. And that sometimes is the father kind of case sensitive or not? Can you, sticking fathers in emails, sticking fathers in websites, people trying to look up folklore.ie and just wondering if should they put a father in the O or not, and if they find it without, does that not defeat the whole purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And it can create. So I think yes, I can see the logic for a fatherless.
I was like, I can't control the fathers in my name. None of us can, and they exist. But I can control it in the name of this, this venture. So my first thing was no father. My second thing was a short name because I didn't want people to be like, you know, when people have, when there's Irish words that people don't know, they just kind of drift off that they're like, so say like there's Cunra na Gaeilge, but then there's like Cumann na Gael, and there's all these different things and people don't know. And they're like, cool. They just don't even know what to say. So I was like, I want it to be short and I want it to be something that people can say easily. So it's not going to be a hard word to say, like smurd. Like you never say that word. So I picked Rec, or E-I-C, which I took from a Scots Gaelic poem by Sorla McLan. He had a poem called Rec Anima. So it meant the dealing or the selling of a soul. But Rec is like if someone's out in the streets, like Moore Street, like selling something and shouting it out.
Yeah.
That's Rec. It comes from the same root as the English word recite.
Oh.
So I liked that I could explain it then to English speakers really easily.
There we are. That's fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. And wreck, it sounds like wreck in English, which I love because there are people who think that Irish is like dead, like a shipwreck.
Mm-hmm.
And the night kind of proves the opposite. So.
Absolutely. That's just fantastic. There's a lot going on. It's almost like a one-word poem.
It's. I like that opinion. I might have created some of that after the fact, but anyway, it sounds good.
This happens all the time. I think when somebody realizes, there was a review of one of the books, and they kind of identified a clever pun that I didn't realize I made. I thought, yeah, I'll run with that.
I'll take it.
Yeah, apparently, motherfucker sounds like a rude word in English.
Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah. What are we going to do with that? And the great thing about events like Rec is that people maybe who don't feel very confident in their Irish can come along and try it out and realize it's not that bad. It's not that scary. Mm-hmm. And so these events are very critical.
I love that about Rec. Like at the start of the night, because it's an open mic.
Yeah.
Usually people sign up beforehand, but then. There'll be people who come along and they're on the fence. And at the start, I'm like, everyone, you're all welcome and you can come, and people don't put up their hands. And then after a few poems, they do. So they feel, okay, everyone here is nice. Everyone here is welcoming and they're not going to judge me because I left out a chez vous, you know.
Yeah.
And I love seeing that progression, and then people come back the next night and they do more. So it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Patter told me one recently, was that extremely over the curb, make that body work. Who came up with that?
He wrote.
Yeah, I think he was telling me someone else had written it. I'm trying to remember who it was.
It might have been Stefano Brian. Yeah, I remember seeing that on Twitter.
It's classic. Yeah, this is a thing.
Oh, no, it was Lara Ni Cassida.
Lara Ni Cassida. Excellent. Well, full props out to Lara Ni Cassida there. We will not take credit for your work, Lara.
Fair play, Lauren. She's great. She's done a lot at Rec, actually. She did a Rec poem for me. So I got some funding from the Irish Writers' Centre at the start of the summer. And I got the tiniest little bit of money, and like St. Bridget, I spread it out like a cloak and I made 4 poetry videos. So I got Sean T. O'Malley, the actor, and...
Oh, yes. From the Western. Clondike, yes.
He was... he's a fantastic actor, and he's amazing with the camera as well. So he's kind of picked up both sides of the camera. He's got skills. And so he was shooting and directing and like envisaging all these poems. 4 different ones. So I did one, Seamus Barrow Sullivan did one, Leach, Oscuri, who else? Lara Ni Cassida and Owen P. O'Murchu. And they're going to start coming out. They're going to be out before the end of the year. So they'll come out probably 1 week before the end of the year now. I guess Tommy Arbish.
Fantastic. Where can people find those?
They will be on Irish Writers' Centre YouTube. Yeah.
Great stuff. Don't mess up.
Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
I'm Sarah Griffin.
And I'm Alan Ton.
And we are the 3 hosts of Juvenalia, a podcast where we talk to interesting people about the bits of pop culture that were important to them when they were young.
We've talked to Sarah Quinn about Madonna.
We've talked to Auntie Donahue about Star Wars.
And we've talked to Sinead Burke about Snow White and the 7 Dwarfs.
And that's just 3 of the 60 plus episodes we have on the Heads Up Podcast Network. So if you remember things from your childhood and want to talk about them, we're here.
Deep chats with sound people about wonderful things from their childhood.
That's what we do here. So give us a listen. Bye, everybody.
See you now.
Bye.
And now there's something that I guess that comes up all the time, and anyone who has an interest in the Irish language will notice. And this is something that Pater and Oscar have told me was one of the genesises of Pop Celtics was just seeing idiotically ill-informed articles about Irish language speakers, the community, the alleged gravy train, and this was something that they kicked them off. And then a hashtag that which you are responsible for, the kicked off more recently, which is Níl sé cear go leor.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to talk about this because this is something that I think a lot of people felt so deeply about. When I was writing Mother Folklore, I made a connection between Peg Sayers and Alanis Morissette, partly because of the unfair vilification and the pedantic criticism, but also because that the Jagged Little Pill came out the same time as Peg Sayers came off the Leaving Cert curriculum, and it's that long ago. I mean, and yet people still, many newspapers will still stick a picture of Peg next to an article about the Irish language. And,
so lazy.
You know, it's like, I mean, you wouldn't put a, I mean, if you wouldn't write an article about the premiership and put a picture of Paul Gascoigne next to it, you know, that's a long time
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it's mad, yeah. So I, at the start of the year, it's Bliain na Gaeilge, and I was in, where was I? I was away, I was looking at my Twitter and I was seeing all of you valiantly fighting against the ignorance of people being allowed to go on the radio and say things that aren't true about the precious Irish language that we love so much. And I was just thinking, this wouldn't happen with any other language. Mm. Like, when you're reading a book and there's like two sentences of Irish in it and they're wrong.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? Did you not think, if I was writing a book with two sentences of German in it, I would get someone who speaks German to check it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like that when they had that plaque going up in the Glasnevin Cemetery and Éirí Amach was spelt wrong. There was a father on like, or there was a father missing or something, or in the wrong letter. And it was just like, if you got one Irish person, speaker, to look at that, they could have told you. Mm-hmm. If you got two, even better.
Yes.
But like, it's such a basic word and it's clear that they didn't even care. And like, that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. So then it was happening a lot in the media because it's Bliain na Gaeilge. They're all having these kind of like tabled programs and discussions about the Irish language. So I just said, like, can we repeat some of the things that you hear about Irish, but just replace the word Irish with the name of another language?
Yeah.
And see how ridiculous it sounds. And like some of the things people were saying was like, do you have to give me your name in Polish or can you not do it in English?
Yeah.
Or like some Spanish speakers are nice, but other ones go overboard and want to speak Spanish all the time. They ruin it for everyone. Like, it's so crazy.
Mm.
And I know obviously Irish is a minority language and it's a different situation, but it's still a language. You know, it's still a language. So the things you're saying and the lack of respect you're showing for the language is not okay. And that's why it's hashtag Níl sé cear go leor.
This is the Níl sé cear go leor. A friend of mine was talking about how he entered a short story into a competition. And he had two Polish characters in it. And one of them just referred to the female character as a whore.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to use the Polish word for it, but he'd gone through Google Translate and it was who are. It was the word, the Polish expression for who are.
Yeah.
As in just, yeah, which would have been abbreviated to WHO apostrophe ori. And yes, it was very, very wrong. And everyone thought, oh, this is a great grand little story until, yes, someone said, actually, I speak Polish and this doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it only took a minute, but
yeah.
I've seen similar expressions used of Irish words thrown into other stories and the person, like, it's okay to feel embarrassed when you make a mistake. It's okay to make a mistake and learn from it. It's even better to check first.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, I suppose if you're using an Irish word in a story, like, the thing about Irish speakers generally is that they like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's nice. And like, whenever I see an Irish word, I mean, that's the thing, Irish, I love being name checked by anyone. Like, as you know, even when like you're watching The Simpsons and they mention Irish people, you're like, yeah, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's when people use it and then don't check you and then it's wrong. You kind of think like, why did you use it? Why don't you care enough to get it right?
Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean in the story if it's just something you made up? And if it's just they wanted to add the illusion of Irishness.
Yeah.
Okay, but like, it's just, it's like they don't think it's a living culture or something that they actually should check up on or have correct.
Yeah, and almost as if it's, mood music.
Yeah.
Which it isn't.
Irish-ish.
Irish-ish, yes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, I started the Irish 4 before, maybe my Irish was very good and it was something I did as part of the learning process and I couldn't get over how willing people were to help me out.
Mm-hmm.
And this mythology about, you know, kind of these defensive kind of Irish speakers who are kind of our hostile. I mean, that's, you could count them on one hand.
Yeah.
I found. As like, you couldn't make a soccer team out of them.
I think it's interesting. Like, I used to feel that fear a lot. coming from the background that I had, I used to always be afraid that there was like this secret room of people who would like be judging everything that I did wrong.
Yeah.
And then what happened? It was like some day I was writing, because I write in English and in Irish and I write poetry. So you can be a bit kind of, in poetry, you can use the language in strange ways, you know, which is just kind of an advantage, I suppose, if you're not 100% native speaker, which I'm obviously not, or 100% even fluent. I was writing and I was just like getting really upset, I think, because somebody corrected my grammar that day or something. And then I realized I never have to write in Irish ever again. I never have to do anything in Irish ever again. I owe Irish nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like, I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean is, like, if anyone ever gives that to me about Irish, like, they don't own the language and I don't own the language, and I never even have to use that language again. I have another one. But I love it. Mm-hmm. And like, I actually don't really mind about making mistakes. And I felt so free when I realized that. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you know what? It's fine. Yeah.
It's, and that's the thing that, you know, we use, I mean, I've made grammatical mistakes in English whilst I'm sitting here speaking to you.
Yeah.
And you haven't scolded me.
No.
Yeah.
You're ruining the language though.
I am. I'm a shocking, my hell behavior is shocking. I said comma when I meant apostrophe just there earlier. You may have heard. And yeah, so I clearly can't be taken anywhere.
Yeah,
but it's okay. And I think even just say like this year, just I'm listening to Kneecap and some things like that. When a person starts talking again, you will make mistakes, and it's okay. And the world won't end, and then you'll speak a bit more bravely the next time. You'll laugh it off, and then gradually you'll just find you won't realize how quickly you get better.
That's the thing. I think I was being so hard on myself. Like when I say that I realized I never had to speak it, that was just when you realize there is this possibility there, because I was so. Like, I mean, I spend, I don't know how long every single day just looking at Irish words, you know, like, I'm not saying that that's even an option or something I'm considering, but like, it's just to realize that what you're doing is not something that you need to do. And like, when people are mean to you about grammar or pronunciation, like that they don't have to affect your life. And you're like, actually, you know what? Water off a duck's back. It's fine.
And yeah, and the context of what correctness is, because say when you're, if you're doing serious etymological research and you're a linguist, then the fact that tear as a country sounds like tear, like a teardrop in English, that's meaningless. And it's bad etymology and you're wrong, wrong, wrong. But if you're a poet, that overlapping meaning means everything. It's just wonderful. Yes, of course, tears and countries are intimately linked from a poetic point of view, not from a linguistic point of view, but yes, why not use that?
Owen P. O'Murphy did a homophonic, I don't know if that's the right word, poem. Mm-hmm. So he, at REC recently, the Irish Writers' Centre, he had images coming up on the screen in English, and the audience had to read out what they were in English.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, he had a teardrop. But it was like, it was ice thawing and then tear. And then he went through the whole thing. But basically, we had to repeat it and from the images and say it again. And it was that poem, Tear in an Og, hot tear in an Og, a cool and tea.
Oh.
And we said it from the English words on the screen, from the pictures. Oh, it was amazing.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
He's some fella, he's some writer.
He's amazing. He's very clever.
And obviously, that the fact that the word for fluent sounds like the river that runs through our city.
Leofa.
Radio Nalifa. Was that not a pun or not?
Radio Nalifa.
Yeah.
Well.
Probably not a pun.
I don't know. I think it is a pun. I'm
after
just like,
the fact.
I was just trying to think of something smarter to say back. Can we edit something cool in?
Yes, we can. We can do this thing. The French refer to this phenomenon as l'esprit d'escalier. When you think of what you meant to say after the party.
On the stairs.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's, absolutely. If you think of something smart to say, Brian will edit it back in.
I'll send it in. It'll just be really obvious, like totally different voice, background noise and everything.
N-A-S-A-A. Níl ach saol a bhán a gut. And that's basically Irish tech speak for YOLO.
Kira, I don't always enjoy Facebook, but I do enjoy memes and Gaeilge.
Good, my God. I'm actually worried about memes and Gaeilge. It's kind of going to die. Because it used to be really, people used to send in things. And I used to spend my life making memes. I've been really busy with other things for the last while. And I've tried to get other people on board.
Yeah.
But I think everyone has their own memes now, you know, so it's not really like a central page thing anymore. So, but I'd love to get people involved. So I'd love to just have loads of admins so that Memes and Gaeilge is always going, because it has like 25,000 likes or something.
Well, there you go.
On Facebook,
I mean, it's because obviously you see things like our Ireland Simpsons fans and stuff, which have a certain amount of user generated. And maybe this is the maybe the approach is a group rather than a page. I don't know, but it's but obviously that we every now and then someone comes out with a spectacular pun and that needs to be shared. Looks like hug mate, hug tooth, hug shape, hug life.
Well, that's the thing. That's what, when Memes Like Greg started off, it was a long time ago, and that was just when memes kind of started out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so great that it was going on for so long, but now there's so many different pages. But the thing I liked about Memes Like Greg is that I would like go to all the different pages, because I'm like always like creeping on everything about Irish on the internet. Like I know exactly what's happening at all times, and I'd get them all and put them on Memes Like Greg to make sure that everyone saw them. So that's why I liked it kind of as a central network. And I'd always link to the original one too.
Yes.
So I would love if people who are interested in memes, and it was funny because I think I met someone out and someone said like, she's Memes Like Greg, because like you wouldn't know, it's like a secret, like Batman. And then he was like, I'm Deanie on Sesh. And I was like, what? Where's the Crumlin shopping center? Like, oh. So he said maybe we could like do some stuff together. So yeah, I'll see.
That's fantastic.
If anyone wants to get involved in Memes Like Greg, get in contact, please.
Absolutely. And there's a Srothic Tour page as well, isn't there, on Facebook?
Yeah, yeah.
That's because the Sroth whole phenomenon happened long after I was in school. But I just think it's gas. You get to talk about a comic strip and get 40% of your marks for it.
It's 40%, is it?
Well, the entire oral, and obviously the Srothic is part of the oral. But yeah, but yeah, gosh, yeah, go for it, you know. Money for jam, as my old Irish teacher would say. But you've got some other activities coming up in TG Carr?
Oh, yeah. I've got a TV show on.
Yay.
Yeah, it's my first time presenting a show. Really excited. It's a documentary. Fui Noiru Erlina. So online shaming.
Oh.
Yeah, it really got me thinking a lot about online shaming and how we use it. Because I think even like the Irish language community use it a lot.
There was a man a while back and he was complaining. And I suppose a theory of things going viral on the internet is that there needs to be a strong visual image. And this person was complaining about how he wasted all his time in school doing Irish, and he left school, he wasn't able to boil an egg. Egg gate happened, or got the hun of.
I remember that. Yeah.
And then the thing is, because lots of people complain about Irish kind of carelessly, but the fact that he gave us this egg image, it just, you know, it grew legs and ran away.
The egg, Humpty Dumpty.
And I believe he is no longer on the internet.
That's the thing, though. It's like we use it in like kind of a light-hearted way, but it is for discipline. We're disciplining people with whom we do not agree.
Yes.
And we're getting all of our friends ganging up against them. And that's kind of a lighter version of online shaming. And then it obviously exists in worse ways as well. So I talked to people who had revenge porn made of them, and sextortion, and just like people, like really serious things, as well as people who've been like, there's like dairy farmers who are being online shamed by vegans.
Oh.
So it's like, actually on Spatial, like there's a lot of different facets to it. And I spoke to kind of experts about the laws about online harassment and stuff like that. So
the Fiol Shantori, you wouldn't want to
Sinead, yeah, no, fuck, on Uclear Fad, so Fiol Shantori, meat denier.
It's just so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hardcore. But it's, that sounds fascinating, because it's, I suppose it's something, obviously, as we both promote Irish on the internet, and it's something we're very aware of. And part of that, it's something that it can be very easy to get sucked into. And while you say, objectively, well, I'd never participate in something like that. You know, it's so easy to get sucked in, or to even participate by just liking stuff.
And that's it, by liking, retweeting. And I think what I kind of came to think by the end of the program was that just the way we act online is just not the same as we act in reality.
Yeah.
And something has to be done about that. Like, people leave horrible comments on my YouTube videos, like about my appearance. And like, it's just so strange. Like, because they wouldn't do it in reality. You know, no one comes up to you in reality and says, I think you're ugly. So that kind of way. But they do it online. So I don't know what they're trying to achieve, or like, and they do ridiculous things, that like they try and correct you and things, and they're actually wrong. It's like, I don't think you'd do that in reality. You know, you wouldn't put keyboard warriors.
It's the strangest thing. And I suppose one of the things you may have experienced as yourself is block shaming. The idea that if someone is actually annoying you and you block them, they screen grab, oh, you know, Derek has blocked me, you know. Uh-huh. I just want to start a conversation about Irish, and obviously this man does not want to be corrected, or this man does not want to be, can't handle a slight disagreement.
That's facial. Block shaming.
Yeah. And the idea is, you know, actually, I'm fairly sure I can block whoever I like. As if blocking someone is, you know, is a horribly rude thing to do. And it's something that people, it's a tool that people are entitled to use and mm-hmm. and often need to use. And particularly because they, a lot of the contributors to this podcast have been using their appeal shield. And then people are saying, well, I think it's very interesting that, you know, that all you Irish language types are all blocking or excluding a certain group of people who just want to learn Irish. That their appeal shield wasn't working on people who just wanted to learn Irish. It was working on a different kind of group. And, you know, it wasn't picking people lightly, but it was just the strangest thing, because there's the veneer of respectability of just wanting debate.
Yeah. It's a very interesting kind of new playground that we have to deal with, or battleground even. And like, I don't even know the rules. You know, when you find out someone else has blocked and you're like, oh, should I block? Should I mute? Like what? Mm-hmm. But I've never actually had to use it myself. But it is interesting, and like even the laws around what people are doing, because it's so... like you said, you can explain things away online.
Yeah.
As like, I was just trying to engage in a conversation. Whereas in reality, like if you're following someone around doing something, like it's very clear that it's harassment, or because there's much more years of description of what is what. But now it's this new area that we're not sure about, and we just don't really know. It's like, this person answers every single thing I write. Like someone said that to me. It was Stephanie Preisner, and I was interviewing her, and she said one person was just answering every single thing she wrote. He must have had like an alert turned on or something, you know, and that even that, like, that feels like harassment, even though it's just answering. So it's kind of a gray area. Like, we don't know yet.
Yeah,
it's the future.
I had that as well. So a person who's just replying to every single thing. As you know, you don't owe everyone a reply. People don't owe every single person a response. You know,
that is stressful, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, sometimes I feel like I owe everyone a response, and if I go away for a week and I don't go on Twitter, and you come back and you're like, I hope they all know that I was away, because I'm not going to catch up. It's not an email. You know, it's an invite to a conversation, I think, that you can decline because you're out having fun.
And this is the thing. And this is, someone was talking recently. This is, it's been a lot of discussion about the phenomenon of being extremely online. There was, and I think it was an Agony Aunt column when someone said that this young woman said she met this guy who was hilarious online. And he was charming, and he had a nice profile pic. And, you know, and they agreed and things. They met. And when they met in person, he was just on his phone all the time.
Oh, because of course he was.
Because of course he was.
Yeah.
And it's, and the thing is, I you know, obviously, like I'd like to think that offline I'm delightful.
And, lovely. Especially in that shirt.
Well, thank you very much. And that's, so like, I like to think, yes, when, particularly when, you know, you want to spend the people who are close to me in my actual life, you know, I want to give them my full attention. And at the same time, though, it's, you often find, because we're still using offline politeness codes for online, the idea that someone speaks to you and you give them an answer.
Yeah, it's a kind of, but I have weird rules. And that's the thing. I think you have to kind of make it really clear what your rules are. So when someone contacts me on Twitter, Instagram or Facebook about something like official or businessy, I always give them my email and I say, here's my email, let's talk.
Yeah.
Because then, like, email is very official. Like, it's, you go in and you answer it and it's all, but I hate it when sometimes I send someone an email and they reply to me on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, sirens are going off in my head, but I know that they don't have the same rules, so I can't be angry. And then I just kind of gently nudge them back. I reply on Gmail again, and then they reply on Facebook, and I'm like rocking myself. But you try and train them.
Mm. Yeah, particularly if someone is approaching every single channel, it's like, I didn't realize how much of my, because they say something like I rarely use Instagram, and I kind of, I only really follow people actually I've met in real life, and most of my photos are just, it tends to be either photographs of the sunrise on my way to work or baby pictures. And so when people contact me on Instagram, I may not see it for a month.
Yes, I'm the same. And I like lost a really nice opportunity to get published because I got contacted on Instagram and I didn't see it. Because it doesn't show you messages if you go on your like phone browser. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the app because I try and not have apps as much as possible. This is so funny that we're now talking about like how to contact people online. But people at home might be like, Kira, you're crazy. Stop trying to enforce your weird rules. But like, everyone can have their own rules though, can't they?
Definitely. The first rule is don't pick up the phone.
Don't pick up the phone. I saw that on Twitter. Someone had it. They're like, don't call me. Like, don't call me out of the blue unless you're like my boyfriend or my friend, you know. But, you know, so true. Like, I don't like when people call me out of the blue and you're like just out of the gym and they're like, hi, can I talk about this business thing? Like, But I, again, I obviously have these weird rules.
I remember when in my early 20s, I remember there was, we were, someone said, you know, if you're breaking up with someone, it has to be a phone call. You can't break up by text. This is the big thing. The breakup text was, and eventually, yes, people started just using that and it became a norm. But that, you know, no one tells you, yes, this is now okay. There's no, like, Anne Doyle doesn't come on the news and say, breakup by text is now acceptable. Yeah. Laws were passed in Shannon, you know, it's a...
I don't think that's acceptable. Do you think that's acceptable?
Well, I'm so far from that world now, you know. I've divorced but leaving someone's wife or her husband by text would be very much unacceptable. I think that would have massive ramifications. But yeah,
you can't enter or exit any personal relationships in text, I don't think, can you?
I'd find it a bit chilly now.
Who would, I mean, if someone broke up you by text, you'd just be thanking yourself that you're not involved with that person.
Yeah, you'd like to think it's something that maybe it's fairly early stage. And some will say it's better than ghosting.
Oh, yeah.
Or like Tyve Shore. Like Tyve Shore, look, is that right?
Yeah, Tyve Shore. And they just don't talk to you ever again.
Yeah, the kind of, and that's its own thing. But you, so it's a delicate balancing act.
Everyone has their own boundaries, I guess. Yeah. And mad notions about what's acceptable.
And often, and sometimes it's even weird. What? Tell me exactly where your boundaries are. It's like, so you're just going to come right up to my boundary and kind of like, you're just going to stand on, you know, like, stand in Nuri and just wave.
There's no, some people see things very black and white. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but then I think it's all gray, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it all comes down, as with everything, to language and communication.
To language, which brings us back to the subject of the podcast.
Certainly does. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to tell our listeners about?
I can't think of anything now. So that program Taboo is part of a series on TG Cahart, about different aspects of kind of Irish society, and it's so good. TG Cahart, the subjects that are covered in TG Cahart are so much more progressive many of the time than the other national broadcaster, who shall not be named. This series covered random acts of violence, rural decline, and everyone, like, that's, people are talking about that a lot with the closing of the post offices, of course. And Owen McDermott did a program. That was the one about the random acts of violence, because he got attacked. Mm. He has no sense of smell or taste anymore since he was attacked randomly on the street. It's crazy. You should definitely watch that episode. And a lot of other people who were just attacked randomly. And then Darren Yacanon did one on CBD oil and how, like, it's being given to children who have, like, epilepsy and seizures, and how it's so good. But, like, I didn't know anything about CBD oil. And the program was so informative. And, like, I don't think you'd be getting that on RT. So
they did TG Cahart did a brilliant documentary a while back on British pop music and the Irish roots of the Irish parentage of between the Beatles, the Smiths, and Oasis.
Did they?
And it was, and obviously the Pogues as well. And it
I
was just
that.
It was just outstanding. It was just really interesting, the kind of the phenomenon, how the kind of the plastic paddy mentality was shaped by completely different forces than the Irish American mentalities and kind of attitudes, in that the Irish America was formed by people leaving a country that wasn't fully theirs and that was kind of robbed from them, whereas a lot of the Irish community in Britain were leaving a failed republic.
Interesting.
And they said that they had a very different sensibility.
Yeah. And they, people, like, I lived in London for a year, and it was only then that I really understood how much people who have Irish parents in England feel Irish, you know, because, like, a guy in the office who, in my mind, like, I was, 22 at the time, you know, in my mind was just this English man. It was when Michael D visited England, and he said, isn't it great that our president's over here? And I, like, in his English accent, which I won't even attempt. And I was looking at him like, our president? And then that's when I really copped about, like, and I've learned a lot since then. That was my first time living abroad. And being in America, obviously, I learned about shades of identity and all of that. But yeah, I have to watch that program. I hope it's on the player still.
I hope so. It was a while back now, but it's great. It's a fantastic national resource. So where can people find you online?
You can find me on Mishacira, MISECCIARA, which is a very uninventive name that I set up on Twitter when I got my first smartphone back years ago. And as was pointed out to me, I missed a trick because I could have called myself Shakira. Shakira.
But you can still change.
I know. I think the brand is huge now. No, it's my name on everything. You know, it's my email address. It's everything. But it's too late. It's not too late for people at home. So before you pick your Twitter handles, think. Mm. You know, think.
Yeah, have a good think.
I just did it in a rush. But there's so many people with the same name. It's everyone just, this is, you know, Misha, whatever.
is being vicious out there.
So I have YouTube, I have SoundCloud, I have Facebook, like page, I have a Twitter, and I have an email address. I have a lot of different things. So
I have Rec. All on the Mishakira brand.
All on the Mishakira brand. And I have Rec, and what else do I do?
Or EIC.
Or EIC. And I'd love people to come tell a story, do a poem. We're going to have the next night will be on in January. And then, of course, we'll have a lovely birthday Rec in me on Vorta. So depending on when you're listening to this, yeah, come along, please. I'd love to meet you.
Fantastic. Gráim míle míle mhaith
go Gráim míle mhaith go dearg.
So it's a slán from me.
Slán go fóilín.
Catch you next time. Thank you so much for listening today. Motherfucker comes out every Friday in the Headstuff Podcast Network. If you can't wait that long to get your next podcast fix, may I recommend some of Headstuff's other wonderful shows, including Juvenalia with Alan, Ellen and Sarah, which they talk to a different interesting person about the pop culture they loved when they were a child. And there is Up to 90, which is all about the 90s. If you want to contact the show, motherfucklore@headstuff.org. Thanks to Kirsten Shield for the artwork. Thanks to Brian for producing. And thanks to all the backroom team at Headstuff for making it happen. Slán go fóill.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Money for jam, lads.